continue with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand for that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, the first item on the agenda is the chair's report, and the first item under the chair's report is the election of the second vice chair to fill the vacancy created by the resignation of Tom Rauch. What I have historically done when we've had the elections for first and second vice chair is to turn that over to the county clerk to run that portion of the meeting, and so I will do that at this point.
Okay, the floor is open for nominations for second vice chair. Is there a nomination? Andrea? Oh, I'm sorry. I did it again. There's been a nomination and a second for Joe Veenstra. Any more nominations from the floor?
Madam Chair,
do I have to call on them? Jim Burns?
Thank you. I would like to nominate Supervisor Ralph Gary for second vice chair.
Is there a second? Jeff Schrader seconds. There's a first and a second for Ralph Geary. Any more nominations for second vice chair? Any more nominations? Any more nominations? Nominations are closed then. Ginny's passing out ballots. Please fill in the name of the person that you voted for, and we will then collect the ballots and have them counted.
This is a secret ballot. You do not need to sign your ballot, by the way, in case anybody's wondering. While those are being collected and counted, I'm going to cover a couple things under the chair's report. First of all, there's a couple things on your desk, and I know Mr. O'Malley sends out an email to all the department heads every month saying, quit putting stuff on supervisors' desks on county board night. I violated that rule twice today. The first one is a letter that we just got from the Fish and Wildlife Service talking about all of the work that our solid waste department did with regard to this tire situation. And because you so rarely have people compliment government entities, I thought that it would be good for people to see this. So I put that on your desk. The second thing that was just sent late this afternoon is a letter that I sent to Mayor Harder on the parking lot issue with regard to the Riverside Center 3 development. It was after having talked with staff basically over the last 24 hours or so, Mr. O'Malley, Mr. Ingleson, Brian Fukuda, and Carl Green with some concerns that they raised that they thought needed to be addressed. As I do say in this letter, the county board has not voted on this issue, has not taken a position for or against, so this letter represents some issues that I'm raising. It does not represent a position of the county board. It's not on our agenda for discussion tonight. If people do wish to discuss this, I can put it on the agenda or add it to the agenda for Monday night's policy planning meeting, but because of the time considerations on this issue, I felt that I needed to get those concerns that I had out. And again, I think it's clear that this is a letter from me. It is not the official position of anybody other than me. So if anybody wants this on the agenda for Monday, just let me know. Audrey, did you have a question or comment?
I do have a comment in that in responding to that situation that you addressed.
Okay, we're not debating it, though.
I know, but no, I want to just make a factual statement that the amount of increased increment that has been derived from a whole variety of sources, including the LHI buildings, which is significantly more than was in the plan, that I just think it's unfortunate that that piece of it is not addressed in the letter. Thank you.
Okay. Andrea?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it'd be important that that would be put on the agenda, on the Planning Commission, planning meeting agenda. I think it's important I hope that, and I will speak to Mayor Harder as well, but I think the Joint Review Board needs to have that discussion as well.
Here's what I'm going to do. At the end of the agenda tonight, under items for future agendas, hopefully by then all of you will have had a chance to read this letter, and I'll just ask for the consensus of the board if you want it on the agenda for Monday or not, because I realize probably many of you have not had a chance to read it yet. So at that point, I'll just ask what people want to do. Okay.
Have the results of the election.
Yeah, that's.
I have the results of the election. Joe Veenstra received 20 votes, and Ralph Geary received 12. 20 is more than a majority, so Joe Veenstra is our next second.
Congratulations, Joe. And also thanks for running too, Ralph. I mean, that's important. All right, let's go on now to Doug Moorman. I've participated in some meetings talking about pandemic planning, and I know that issue has gotten a lot of attention recently nationwide. I'm not sure that people have a real appreciation locally for the amount of time and planning that has gone into dealing with that issue here. Just an incredible amount of coordination, and I wanted Doug to have a chance to inform this board what's going on at the county level.
Thanks. 4 points. Number one is the relative danger of the illness. Fortunately, at the moment, it seems not to be significant. There have been 7 people who have died in Wisconsin from it. In the state, we had about 700 deaths from seasonal influenza last year, so it gives you some perspective. There is going to be confusion on whether or not it's dangerous over the next several weeks because the disease is going to be very prevalent. It is very prevalent already, but how dangerous it will be is yet to be determined. There is significant, as the chairperson has pointed out, there's been significant coordination in the past in terms of planning, both with the private sector and the public sector, and how we would respond. That planning is continuing. The dilemma associated with the planning is we don't know, there's a lot of information we don't know yet, which brings me to the third point, and that is a week ago I was telling folks that they should try get a seasonal vaccination now and then expect that there to be 2 H1N1 vaccinations in October possibly. Since then, and frankly, that's what's in the document that you have in front of you, the world has changed a little bit. There will be vaccine available in the country in October, but the chances of it coming to La Crosse, not because La Crosse is any different than the rest of the world, is small. There will be lots of vaccine, but it takes a while to get vaccine spread around the country, and then when it is available, it's going to go to priority groups first, like healthcare providers, first responders, children in schools and in universities, for the reasons that you already know. That's where we're seeing it now.
County board members?
County board members will get it eventually.
Last. Got
the
it.
The hope is, frankly, the hope is that the vaccine, that the disease doesn't move through the community so fast that the vaccine will not be helpful, but we're moving as quickly as we can. The fourth point is that the health department will be receiving about $200,000 in the next month to be used to assist in the distribution of the vaccine. The vaccine itself will come at no cost. The federal government is providing that, and the federal government is providing the needles and such to administer the vaccine. The coordination, the distribution of the vaccine in the county, however, does need to happen. I will be bringing to you next month some detail about what we think we might be utilizing, how we might utilize that $200,000. We certainly would not be, I don't know exactly how it's going to be used. We're going to seek to have outside parties contract with folks to do things that need to be done. We certainly are not looking to hire lots of La Crosse County employees for a variety of really good reasons. So I would anticipate you looking at a more concrete plan in a month.
Yeah.
Questions?
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your second fact here, you say that there'll be two vaccinations, probably 3 weeks apart. Since then, there's been some talk that it would only be one.
Yes, there is talk. That talk is based upon one published study in the New England Journal of Medicine that for some portions of the population, one vaccine may be sufficient. There's just a ton of scurrying going on by the folks at the Center for Disease Control to figure out whether that, in fact, is the case. We are all going to be seeing lots of different ideas in the media over the next few weeks and months. The Center for Disease Control has not made that determination yet. If they make that determination, then they'll tell us, and we in turn will communicate that out. It's good that we're having lots of discussion. Frankly, people need to be aware of the complexity, and hopefully you will start thinking about getting your regular seasonal influenza shot in the next month and a half, later too, if you can't get to it sooner, and then the seasonal or the H1 later on. At the moment, the county health department received about a third of the vaccine that we've ordered for seasonal influenza, and we've begun the process for getting that vaccine distributed. But so that process is underway. And you county board supervisors will be invited, as you have in past years, to get that seasonal vaccination.
Joe Veenstra.
This is perhaps outside of your realm, but I had mentioned to the chair at one of the meetings we were at recently about the risk of an outbreak in the jail and the expense that would be to the county to have to treat a number of inmates if it turned into an outbreak. And I thought it might be a possibility that we might be able to provide the vaccine over there.
It certainly is a dilemma, and getting the vaccine when it becomes available and how it's allocated. We're going to follow what the Center for Disease Control provides to us. In the meantime, the sheriff and I have had conversation. The Center for Disease Control has done a lot in terms of providing information to law enforcement agencies around the country on things that they can do to prevent as much disease transmission, not only among inmates, but employees as they can. I just can't assure you that inmates will be a higher priority where their priority is. They certainly have we're closely confined. Lots of people need lots of stuff first.
Any other questions for Doug? Okay.
Doug, thank you very much for the update.
Appreciate that. Next thing, we have a vacancy on the MTU board. If anybody's interested in serving on that, talk to me after the meeting. WCA conference was held over the last earlier this week, and we got a plaque from WCA in appreciation for hosting the conference. I want to thank all the people who were involved in all of the work that went into that, many people here in the room in particular. I want to thank Arlene for all the work that you did. I want to thank Jeff Schrader for shaking the apple tree and getting like 1,000 apples to hand out. Those were much more popular than the candy that they were giving out at other places, so that was great. Just other people who did the transportation things and so many other things there. I received so many compliments from the WCA staff, other supervisors around the state. They love coming here. They go home. They tell everybody what a great place it is to visit, how organized things were and everything. So just a very positive event, so I'm really pleased that it went well and want to thank everybody for their hard work in that regard. Let's see, that gets us to supervisor conference reports. Arlene.
Thank you. I just want to let you know that there were 1,000 attendees. I was down yesterday to get all the different reports. Also, our lacrosse booth went very, very well, and we had the three guys between Ralph and Tom and Jeff Schrader. They were just, people come by and they said, the guys are just a hoot. And they were, a hoot, H-O-O-T.
Ray.
Ray, I'm sorry, Ray.
Don't worry, the chairman's called me worse.
Well, then this is a compliment to
not
you.
Not today. Okay.
And also, I'd like to thank all the workers and the supervisors that when I asked them that they helped out and got excellent, excellent reports from everyone. WCA thanked and thanked. And matter of fact, next year, Milwaukee, the following year, Wisconsin Dells, the following year, that back to La Crosse. So if I'm still on the board, I've kept all my notes, and I'll keep them in a safe place. Also, I wanted you to know that I did get from the Radisson a room in bed and breakfast, Marriott, a king-size jacuzzi, Holiday Inn a room, one night, and there were door prizes, and where they were over $400 total. And so that was very, very nice. So let's see. Okay, I have another report on the picnic. 60 people, it's the same as last year. I have bought all the supplies for next year, so it's leaving us a balance of $38. My third report is from WCHA, Wisconsin County Highway Association. I got a call from our executive director asking me to give, I'm on the board of directors, they want me to be vice chair. I told them 2 months ago I have some health problems that I can't do it. They had a special meeting, the executive committee said call and ask me. They know I have health issues and they'll take my place for the first couple months. So I told them I was very happy with that. So
great.
That is all of my report, and thank you.
Thank you. Other reports, anybody? Maureen Friedland.
Yes, Supervisor Hampson and I attended the WCA seminar on open records and records retention, August 31st in Stevens Point. And I wanted to just bring out some of the more interesting topics that I thought that were discussed. Some of the matters we, all the board members already know, such as that our personal email may be subject to a public records inquiry. What we haven't already talked about very much is that all of our mail could be requested in order to find out what the public records would be. So that's something to be thinking about when using your personal email instead of county email. Everyone should be learning where and how to save records with directories or subdirectory sites and the like. Counties are urged to have policies requiring even cell phones and personal PDAs to sync up regularly. Some of the newer places where public records are showing up are social networking sites such as Facebook, LinkedIn profiles, and blogs. Counties can require retention of audio tapes of meetings. I thought that was interesting because sometimes the audio tapes have some information that don't come out in the minutes, and it's worth looking at those. So we could have a policy on that. And finally, one of the other hot topics in open records these days is surveillance tapes in patrol cars. The Attorney General's office says that 120 days for retention is required, even though the technology in many of the counties rolls the tapes out in about 5 to 10 days. So those are some of the highlights that I thought were most interesting.
Interesting. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was that intended to spook us, or? I mean, I don't know if Bill wants to comment on some of that stuff, but the whole bit about PDAs and personal cell phones and all that is, quite frankly, a little creepy from the back row here. And I don't know, I was being facetious when I asked that question, but...
Bill, of course, has been warning us for a long time now. Bill, you want to follow up?
Well, you know, we have seen cases down in the Milwaukee area where they've gone after, the news media or other individuals have gone after... personal computers, where personal computers were used for county or government business. So I think that's an issue. We tried to address that several years ago when we suggested to archive in a county site your email or use county email to do county business. So, we had an ethics seminar and talking about technology on Monday at our association meeting, and it's all of this stuff, the social networking kinds of issues are coming, where county employees now think that they should use social networking to market the county business, and that's a whole another issue that is probably coming. So technology, unfortunately, in the words of the assistant AG that spoke to us, has outdistanced the public records law. When that was written, maybe 20 years ago, the technology wasn't anywhere near where it is today. So beware of what you do and how you do it.
You know, Bill Black is here, and Wisdom's motto is that, you know, if you don't want to hear about it on Wisdom, don't let it happen. The same thing applies in this situation. If you say it or type it or write it, and there is a record of it, you should assume that it is a public record. If you have any question, assume that it is accessible. So keep that in mind in whatever you do. So your profile on Match.com, we can get that. Other announcements, reports, Vicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last week on the 8th, 9th, and 10th, I attended a conference in Washington, D.C. related to a grant that we had been awarded, and this is a grant that Jane Claycamp sought. It's on transitioning from jail to community project, and there were five of us on a team that went to Washington, D.C. You have a pamphlet on your desk related to it that explains about it. This was at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., and it is a project with the Urban Institute and the National Institute of Corrections. The Urban Institute is a nonprofit, a nonpartisan think tank. The interesting thing that there were six counties that participated throughout the United States in this grant, and two of them had been participating for a year, then they had added four counties, and La Crosse was one of those counties added. It's interesting that we are the smallest of the counties. It is Denver County, Davidson County, which is Nashville, Tennessee, Kent County in Michigan, and Douglas County in Kansas, and so and Orange County in California. So we were the smallest, and some of these were jails with a population of 3,000-4,000 people. It was interesting to note again that La Crosse really is very progressive in its treatment and in its policies and procedures and programs that it has, and in many ways we were ahead of the game with the two counties that had been participating for a year. This is an attempt to reduce recidivism by making sure that when we transition someone from jail to the community, that they have a greater chance of success. And it also is an illustration of how our staff looks to use grants like this and also the National Institute of Corrections to help us in what we do and to be more successful. This will help to be more efficient in the particular programs that we have a greater partnership with the community. So it was an interesting conference, and I commend Jane in seeking this grant because I saw lots of possibilities for assistance in making us just more efficient in the using our resources. Thank you.
Questions for Vicki Burke? Sharon Hampson, did you have your hand up before?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to add something to Maureen's. If you weren't scared before, one of the most recent court cases was in the Wisconsin Rapids School District, and a group of citizens requested all teachers' personal emails all of their school emails, because they wanted to see what percent of school time they were using to do personal business. So if they sent an email to their husband saying, Johnny has a doctor appointment this afternoon, can you pick him up? That was taken by the court and shown to those people. So nothing is sacred.
Good point. Any other conference reports or such? Audrey Cotter.
A comment in relation to the collaboration conference. thank you to everybody. I think those of us that were there, it's kind of faded because of it being just a month ago. But it was, I thought it was wonderful to see the different groups with very broad representation collaborating at the end.
Thank you. That's a very good point. I think it was the best one yet. I think that the people who did presentations were excellent. And I agree. In addition to local officials, it was really nice to see the large turnout among citizens and business community. It was very, very good in that regard. Other announcements or conference reports? Jeff Schrader?
The invasive species are coming. I was at that the...
Oh, sure. As if we're not scared enough by email, now you've got another one.
Seriously, all you people that use the river and have access to the river, those are the main issues where the invasive species are being spread from point A to point B. And they gave an example of the people over along Green Bay. The Great Lakes water table has fallen, I don't know, 5 or 10 feet over the past 10 years, and the beaches have extended way out, and there are some invasive grass that have come there. They look like some of the stuff we plant in our gardens, and these people can't even get out to the water now, and it's declined their property values and everything, and then everybody is, they don't know what to do with it. So invasive. But so just a reminder, everybody should be aware of that when they're out on the river and pulling their boat out and things like that. Thank you.
Good point. Anybody else? All right. I think that gets us to County Administrator Report.
Okay, just very quickly, just a reminder that Monday night we will be talking about the strategic plan for Lakeview Healthcare Center. It's been included and available to you. Please spend some time taking a look at that. Pam and I will walk through the progress we're making on a number of these items and the status and why it's important to the viability of Lakeview. In addition to that, in your lockers, if you haven't already picked it up, is the full county administrator's budget, all of the detailed line items, as well as I'll direct you to, in the front is a detailed summary which compares levy increases from one year to the next, and the bottom of the back page of that actually summarizes your entire budget, as well as a couple of insert sheets that give you some ideas on comparison of use of fund balance, new position requests, and position deletions. This is not all the information on that. You will end up getting resolutions with all of the costs involved. We just wanted to give you a snapshot of what's included, as well as outside agencies. That evening, I'll go through a PowerPoint that I don't have completed, but it will give you more detail on some of the summaries of where the shifts in spending, uses of fund balance, some interesting information about tax rates and some other types of things. You'll get that. I apologize. That will be given to you that night, but it will helpfully summarize. I didn't think you'd mind because we've given you, what, about a 300-page document here. So I think that'll keep you busy for a while. But Monday night is not to make any decisions. It's to give an overview for everything and to help to identify, again, the major issues and the major policy issues that you'll be asked to make both for this year and for 2011, because it will continue to present significant changes to us. So then we'll start the committee process of going through all of those issues. The last item I wanted to highlight that's not listed, but it is in your packet, is if you have not taken advantage of this, this is the October 1st, is emphasizing the open house at the Solid Waste Department and the Xcel Energy Plant. Please, if you want to do that, particularly newer supervisors, if you haven't had an opportunity, very impressive operation. In particular, we as a county have a significant investment in the environmental protection at the Xcel Energy Plant. So if you haven't had a chance to see that, please call the number that's on there so that you can arrange for when to see that, as well as the other open house tour. The Xcel Energy Plant doesn't have regular tours all the time, so this is a good thing to access if you have not done that, so please do that. That's the end of my report.
All right. Any questions for Steve? Okay. Cards and correspondence. There are several things on the bulletin board. There is a memorandum regarding 2010 ITPEC budget allocations, Ehlers Advisor newsletter. an agenda for a seminar, a thank you card from Mitzi Parr's family, a thank you letter to the county for the $25,000 donation to the UWL Stadium, probably more things yet up there. So if you have a chance after the meeting, take a look at the bulletin board. Mr. Ebert, did you have a question? You're frowning. 25. All right. No committee meetings during recess because I don't expect we're going to have a recess, so we'll do appointment.
Chairman Doyle.
I just have one appointment, Bill Brockmiller to replace Brad Paff on the LADCO board.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Bilskemper. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Thank you. Consent agenda, moved by Roger Plesha to approve, seconded by Arlene Benrood. Is there any discussion or changes or comments with regard to the consent agenda? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Planning, Resource, and Development Committee, Marilyn Pedretti.
Okay, here we go. Item number 5/9, conditional use permit number 799. Filed by Sister Sharon Berger, Mission Counselor acting in behalf of Sister Marlene Weisenbach, President of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, to establish a cemetery for natural burial of members of the FSPA congregation on land zone transitional ag district in the town of Greenfield. This was approved by the committee unanimously. I make a motion to move the committee report.
I move to approve the committee report, seconded by Bob Kyle. Any questions or discussion on this one? Jill Billings.
Thank you. I was just wondering if the town of Greenfield got a chance to weigh in.
Anybody know the answer to that? Charlie, you know the answer to that?
Town of Greenfield has a 10-day period to respond to the committee meeting, and I don't have a copy of any correspondence from the town of Greenfield, but they sure would have had an opportunity.
Don Vina.
The nuns were down to talk to them a couple of times already, and it's just a matter of them sending us a letter.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? John Menninger.
I just want to say that I've had Franciscan sisters as teachers of mine since I was 6 years old, and I never cease to be impressed with how wonderful these FSPAs are and how progressive and visionary, and we are very lucky to have them in our community.
Very good point. Anybody else? Questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 6-9, conditional use permit number 800, filed by Kelly A. Schmidt Jordan and Jennifer Jordan to operate a home-based business that deals with products for sensory disabled children and adults on land zoned residential A in the town of Shelby. The committee denied it. I make a motion to move the committee report.
Ms. Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to deny. Is there a second? Seconded by Tara Johnson. Discussion or questions? All in favor of the committee report, which is to deny, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 7-9, conditional use permit number 801, filed by Jeffrey and Tammy Baker to operate an auto repair facility which includes mobile air conditioning and refrigeration repair on land zoned Ag District A in the town of Holland. It was approved with 8 conditions. I make a motion to move the committee report.
Ms. Pedretti moves the committee report, which is to approve, subject to 8 conditions, seconded by Andrea Richmond. Discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 8-9, zoning petition number 1821, filed by Donald E. and Carrie L. Henderson to rezone from transitional Ag District to Ag District A in the town of Holland. It was also unanimously approved. I make a motion to move the committee report.
Move the committee report, seconded by Don Meyer, the committee report being to approve. Any questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 9-9. Zoning petition number 1823, filed by Alan E. and Terry L. Neubauer to rezone from exclusive Ag District to Ag District A in the town of Hamilton. The town of Hamilton has requested to refer it back to committee so they would have some more time. So I make a motion to refer back to the committee.
Motion to refer back to committee, seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion on referral. All in favor of referring back to the committee, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Sharon Hampson. That motion carries.
And item 10-9, a resolution. Approval of a plat of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration Natural Burial Cemetery. Whereas the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration have requested approval of the plat of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration Natural Burial Cemetery located in the town of Greenfield, La Crosse County. Whereas pursuant to Section 15707 of Wisconsin Statutes of La Crosse County Board is required to approve said cemetery plat before it can be duly recorded in the Office of the Register of Deeds. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the plat of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration Natural Burial Cemetery. Fiscal note, there is no fiscal impact to La Crosse County. I move this resolution.
Moved by Marilyn Pedretti, seconded by Jay Johnson. I have never heard a resolution read with such enthusiasm in my life. Ooh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Do I have to improve then on this resolution to be just as enthusiastic?
We'll see how that goes.
All right. 11-9, a resolution. Authorization of a purchase of agriculture conservation easement, PACE, program for 2010. Whereas agriculture and farmland are important to La Crosse County for generating economic revenue, providing important environmental benefits, maintaining our rural character and open spaces, and by contributing to our quality of life. And whereas agricultural land continues to be converted to other uses as a population moves out into the more rural agriculture areas of our community. Whereas in March of 2008, the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors adopted the La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan 2027, which set one of the goals for the comprehensive planning to develop realistic strategies to protect prime and productive agricultural lands from the encroachment of development, define and differentiate between lands with high and marginal agricultural value. And whereas the County Farmland and Open Space Preservation Draft includes a PACE program that offers a voluntary option for owners of farmland outside of planned urban growth areas to protect their farmland by participating in the PACE program. Whereas La Crosse County would administer a pilot program with current staff, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby authorizes staff to administer a countywide PACE program for 2010. Fiscal note, no additional local funding is requested for this program in the 2010 budget. I move for its approval and ask to retain the floor.
Moved by Marilyn Pedretti, seconded by Margaret Wood. Ms. Pedretti.
With the board's permission, I would ask that Charlie Hand be allowed to answer specific questions about this program. And I do have a letter from the City of Onalaska. Just quoting one part of it, the PACE program is an economic development tool that will retain in agriculture the most productive and therefore most valuable farmland. Also note that the Town of Holland had a plan commission meeting about 2 weeks ago in which about 25 area farmers were invited to have input, and it was very highly received. And I believe the farmers in that area were more than willing to look at the program. The plan commission is interested in continuing to pursue this if the county does pass this. Thank
Jeff
you.
Schrader.
What were the outcome of Charlie's roadshow that he was?
Which one?
Charlie, how many presentations did you make throughout the county?
approximately 15 presentations over the past probably 4 years, Jeff. So around 7 or 8 in the last 3-4 months. I didn't really ask for a consensus. I presented and my opinion was everybody at every one of the meetings was in favor of it. I'm joking. I didn't ask that question. I did receive very positive response. I've actually sat at a couple of kitchen tables, in the morning before chores, and with friends of mine that are farmers that received it very well. Obviously, everybody has concerns. It's a voluntary program. Most of them have mortgages. Most of them have bankers that they're going to have to talk to if this is something that gets approved and that they're going to have to deal with. So it's a serious issue for them and their families that they have to deal with. But most of them really like having another option besides just fee simple sale for to a developer.
No, I understand, according to this resolution, that the initial monies are coming from the federal government. Is that right?
Actually, the state. Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection is going to be probably our best source of funding.
And then after that, it'll be up to us to provide the finances for this?
No. At this point, the pilot program is no local funding. So the funding would either come as a donation from that landowner, as a donation of value that they need to use then for their tax purposes, etc., or from the federal government. So if the money from DATCAP dries up, then we don't look at that source of money. We have to go to the federal source of money. But this resolution is not requesting any local money.
I realize that. I was just talking about the future. Thanks.
Okay.
Other discussion or questions for Charlie? Joe Veenstra.
Charlie, if you know, I guess, is this something we're going to have to approve on an annual basis or something that we're just going to have a program that's budgeted normally? What's the idea, I guess, long term?
I think the idea is to take a look at it in the 2012 budget and see if there's any serious consideration for using local dollars. At that point, you should have, as a policy board, some idea of the success of the program, of the interest level that's out there, and what you think, if it's valuable to put it in the budget at that point or not. I don't know what the staff recommendation would be at that point. That's a couple years from now, and hopefully we've got a better idea of how much interest there is out there and how much value we're gaining from it.
In one of the whereas clauses, it talks about a temporary goal of protecting 500 acres. Is the temporary goal mean 2010, or is that okay?
And with the roadshow that Jeff asked about, everybody said, why just 500 acres? Why shouldn't we set the goal higher? And so it was really nice to hear that.
By the way, Don Meyer had suggested that we make a copy of the August 3rd Planning, Resource, and Development Committee minutes, because it lays out a lot of information and may answer some of the questions people have. So this is on your desk if you're so inclined. It's at the bottom of the first page of that to give some information. Did I see a hand back there?
I'm going to pass because I'm sure Ryan beat that by question.
Maybe. Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a need for this in the rural area. It was about 4 years ago that Charlie and I got on a flight and we went out east. We saw Maryland, Pennsylvania, and
New Jersey.
And we went to a lot of county governments out there. The problem they have out there is that everything is totally built up with only a few farms in between all of the built-up areas. They were building a two-story chicken house right next to a bunch of apartment buildings that were going up, and we're going to be in the same situation in years to come if we don't do something here. And we need to put a program in place that will preserve some farmland. There may be a lot of politics being played with this before it's all over, but we need to work out a system whereby we will take a lot of the politics out of the system. And yes, the year we were out there, I think the one county in Pennsylvania appropriated $18 million themselves, and or was it $9 million? $9 million themselves, and $9 million came from the state for the addition of the expansion of the program, because out there it's a big difference than here, because the cost of farmland is so much higher out there than it is here. So we can go a lot further with a lot less money here if we can start preserving it now. And it's just a matter of getting our foot in the door and then working those acres on a year-to-year basis based on how many dollars we have available to us. And Charlie is pretty good at going looking for some of that money. So the feds have some money. All we have to do is apply, but we need this resolution on the table before we can go out and look.
Other questions or discussion?
And they were 30 years in when they were spending $18 million. So,
so that's not in this year's budget?
No.
Okay. Ray Ebert.
Yes, Mr. Handy, do you have a program already set up to do this that we can review? My concern is that we're just going to say, you go out and run it. I guess I would, first answer, do you have it already set up?
What we would need to do is bring before you an ordinance that you would consider and adopt, and then there would need to be an ag preserve board that's appointed. As the staff, there's a number of staff that would be involved in this process, not just me. I would probably be the main staff to support that ag preserve board. But those things are steps that would need to be taken after this resolution would be approved, if it's approved. So, yes, there's a program that we could set up in place that I have copies of. That would be the next steps, would be bring it before you for future policy decisions.
Okay, so in other words, if we were to change this from administer, the now therefore be resolved to develop a county right program to be approved by the board, that would not really change the.
Not at all.
But it would certainly make it more succinct that you could not go and administer it on your own, which actually this would authorize.
That would be fine with me.
I would like to make a motion that we amend it for the now therefore be resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby authorizes staff to develop a countywide PACE program to be approved by the board.
Mr. Ebert offers an amendment seconded by Mr. Schrader. Discussion on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously. Mr. Ebert, remember to write that out to give it to the clerk. Okay, we're back to the resolution as presented after Ms. Billings gets that call. Yeah, probably. Yeah, really. Any further discussion? Mr. Bina.
Well, just as a good example of what's happening is that we need to preserve that farmland, because one of my neighbors just made a deal on his farm, and his auction is the 20th of this month. He sold it for 1.3 to a banker. I don't know what's going to happen to it. One of my neighbors sold 445 acres to the Matthews, and that deal isn't quite finalized. So my neighbors are moving out, and I don't know exactly why, but I'll let you draw your conclusions, but that means the value of my land is going up, and as my land gets more valuable, there's a tendency to put it in houses rather than agriculture, because agriculture is so doggone poor right now that the prices are so low that we need to do something.
On behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you for the additional taxes that you're going to be paying, Mr. Bina. We do appreciate that. Further discussion? All in favor of the resolution as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Mr. Spiker. That resolution passes. Is that it for Planning, Resource, and Development, Ms. Pedretti? Thank you very much. Executive Committee, Tara Johnson.
I have to get my soprano voice ready here. I have item 12-9, an ordinance to create section 2.04, paren 10, paren B, 11 of chapter 2, Code of Ethics of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding costs upon frivolous complaints. This is an ordinance that adds a provision to the ethics code that provides for costs to be awarded to a party wronged by frivolous complaints brought under the ethics code. I ask that this be considered its first reading, and we take it up for vote. next month.
As a proposed ordinance, that would be held over for 30 days, so please take that out of your packet and hold on to it so we don't have to make another set of pages for that, unless there are any questions or discussions. Mr. Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only question I had is there's got to be a story behind this, and I don't know the story. It would be nice to know what the reasons were that you came up with this ordinance. That's all I'm asking.
Right, and that is my intention next month under discussion to talk about that. Mr. Schrader.
Where the ordinance ends, it's talking about the ethics board. Are they going to be the ones that impose the penalties on the people?
Correct. It would be solely within their discretion. We would have no say in it.
But we're going to discuss this at length, evidently.
Right. Next month, unless people have questions tonight. Further discussion or questions? All right, that'll be held over for 30 days.
Item 13-9 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization to participate in legal review and possible challenge to Xcel Energy rate increase. Whereas Xcel Energy has filed an application with the PSC requesting an increase in electric and natural gas rates, and whereas the City of La Crosse has requested the County of La Crosse to join them and the School District of La Crosse in this effort to maintain reasonable electric and natural gas rates for the area, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby authorizes the county to participate in the legal review to possibly challenge Xcel Energy's recent proposed increase in the electric and natural gas rates with the other participating governmental bodies by contributing an equal share with the other participants not to exceed $4,000. Be it further resolved, the County Board Chair and County Clerk are hereby authorized to execute any documents needed to accomplish this resolution after approval by Corporation Council. Fiscal note is that the funding from the General Fund Operating Contingency Account Org 1063 Account 79028. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, second by Jeff Schrader. This would require a two-thirds vote of the entire board because it is not presently budgeted. Discussion. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. What is the proposed rate increase?
Like 14%?
14%. Is that for La Crosse County residents, or is that for the larger region?
Anybody know? Gary?
I'm not sure specifically, Jim. All I can do is give you history. This arrangement was set up a couple years ago between the school district, City of La Crosse, and La Crosse County when about a 14% increase was requested 2 years ago. In fact, they actually only approved about a 7% increase, and in so doing, it saved La Crosse County just on electrical probably around $41,000. So, again, I cannot give you specifics on the new proposal, but again, I think it's worth our while. It cost La Crosse County $1,700 to participate 2 years ago. I think it would be worth another $1,700 or up to $4,000 to again join with the other two to request as small of an increase as possible.
Leon
Thank
Paff.
You. I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you. I was just wondering, is legal work done by...
Leon, I don't think your microphone's on.
Well, light is on, but isn't it?
Okay.
Hello.
There you go.
All right. No, I was wondering, is the legal work done by your staff, or do you hire lobbyists to
no.
do it?
Again, look, City of La Crosse has coordinated the effort, but in so doing, they are actually hiring the law firm referenced on the resolution. There is a law firm referenced on the resolution.
Which is the same law firm that did it last time.
Correct.
Other questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 14-9 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acknowledging the best of public service. Whereas the following employee has been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County, Tom Rauch, La Crosse County Board, 3-plus years, and whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move its approval.
Moved by Chair Johnson, second by Jill Billings. Discussion? Jeff Schrader.
How is Mr. Rauch?
Mr. Rauch is recovering from his surgery. It went well. I have talked to him several times since then. He is in very good spirits. If anybody wants to give him a call, he will be happy to give you highly detailed explanations of what happened. It's fascinating, though. It's absolutely incredible what medical technology can do these days. And so I guess he has good reason to want to talk about it. But he's doing very well. John Menninger.
Well, if Bobby Erickson was here, he'd probably vote against this, but... But I was just curious, you know, for a resolution like this, do we put it in like a frame, or is it just a piece of paper we drop in the mail? Or, I mean, I think it'd be nice to put this in a small frame. I know I'm a big spender, but...
Anybody have a problem with that?
Rather than just ship them a piece of paper, just...
All right, we'll do that.
This is one of our colleagues, that's why.
Well, I know.
See, Bobby Erickson's still here. I don't want to cause any trouble.
You know, next door at the city council, you never see them laughing. But over here, you know, we enjoy governing, and I think that's the big difference between us. All in favor? All in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That's with frame. All righty. Is that it for you, Ms. Johnson? Thank you very much. Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee, Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number 15-9, to honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, resolution to approve bioretention basins and bike racks for law enforcement addition. Whereas the resolution approving the addition to the LEC included a number of energy conservation measures and sustainable design concepts, and whereas alternate bid C lead items and alternate bid F bioretention basins were not initially approved, and whereas the La Crosse County Land Conservation Department has reviewed the original bioretention basins specs and improved on the overall design, thereby adding to the initial estimated cost of construction, and whereas the LEC Construction Committee has reviewed all of the sustainable concepts included in alternate bid C and F and is recommending that the following items be included in construction of the new addition: bike racks, 5,000, bioretention basins, 54,641, for a total of $59,641. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby approve the above items, listed items, for a total cost of $59,641. Be it further resolved that the cost of these items be included in the project funding as determined by the County Board through a combination of the final debt issue or loan from general fund. Fiscal note, if this resolution is approved, the total project cost to date will be $29,943,195. This dollar amount includes the original construction bids, $28,946,029, probation and parole build-out, $641,001, and alternate bid E-heat reclaim, $146,524, which were previously approved by the board. It also includes the $150,000 reserve for solar hot water. I move its approval and ask for the fuller.
Moved by Vicki Burke. Is there a second? Second by Sharon Hampson. Vicki Burke.
Yes. The committee met at 5:45, and the vote on this resolution was 5-3. I think you have some information. We're given some information last month on bioretention as opposed to dry retention. and you probably still have that information with you. I will indicate to you that because of the conference that I was at, I was not at the meeting, so there may be additional information there that other committee members would like to share as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion or questions? Anyone? Ralph Geary.
What's the payback on this? How many years? Does this have a payback to it?
Do you know the payback time on this?
Does it save us anything?
The bike racks don't have a payback.
No, not the bike. I meant the bioretention.
The bioretention basins don't have a specific payback because it's not related to energy savings. It's related to environmental protection. So it's a policy issue among the board to decide the amount of environmental protection.
Okay, there's no payback then.
There could be some savings if the city of La Crosse ends up doing a stormwater utility, but until they end up accomplishing that, it would be speculation how much that would save.
Is there annual maintenance? I see that it said it's treated by a variety of physical, chemical, and biological processes. Do we have to add chemicals or something annually or monthly? Or what does chemical treating mean?
Mr. Spropoulos is nodding his head no, but if you want more questions of any maintenance, we've got Carl Green, who's quite an expert on it, as well as Jim Spropoulos.
No, I'm just reading the back.
He's just going to have to deal with it.
When it said it was treated by chemicals, I thought these are just natural chemicals? Or
Carl, got an answer on that?
Regarding if the chemical treatment would have a cost to it? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Annually, do we have to add something to it? Chemicals or something?
There wouldn't be any requirements of fertilizer. I mean, there would be native plants that would be used, so there wouldn't be, to my understanding, any requirements of a chemical treatment for it.
Okay. I was just reading it off the handout, and it said they were using chemicals, so I didn't know if they were. They're not, then.
Mr. Spropoulos, anything to add to
typically there is not chemicals that I'm aware of. Of the rain gardens that we've put in, these are a little bit more intense. They're kind of a beefed-up rain garden, and there hasn't been chemical treatments on those rain gardens.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any need to treat them for mosquito larvae?
No.
Okay. Lots of hands up. I think I saw Audrey Cotters first.
Thank you. Mr. O'Malley touched on it. From everything that I'm seeing over at City Hall, it's very, very likely that a storm utility will be in place. And actually, we had a presentation last week. It's unfortunate. We should have invited the county to participate as well, because it will hit the people who are currently not paying property tax. And the county has an awful lot of land and impervious space. So I would just encourage us to proceed with this particular piece of improvement. Thank you.
Jay Johnson.
Yes, that was my comment as well, that okay. Although we don't know that a stormwater utility is inevitable, I think it's very likely. And so this feature would save the county money every year for the life of the building if the utility does go through, and I think that's important.
Other discussion? Leanne Paff.
Thank you. I was just wondering if if this is done now for $54,600, would it cost more to do it later? Does it cost a lot more to do it later? Has it been looked at that way, that that now is the time to do it, or if it doesn't cost any more to do it if the city does come with that? Does it cost a lot more to do it next year or the following year?
I don't know if, I haven't necessarily reviewed in detail the plans. I would have to say that there would be, whatever rehab work would be required plus the labor. And so depending on when, whatever labor rates increase, there would be that.
But really what I'm saying is, does it have to be part of the building now? Does that change a lot? Would it be a twice as expensive to do it after the building is completed, what I'm asking.
I think maybe Mr. Spropoulos would be better apt to answer.
I don't think that it's necessarily twice the cost, but it will be quite a bit more because they're doing the earthwork now, and for us to come back in later to do the earthwork is going to be rather expensive. So, yes, it would be more.
Other questions or comments? Marilyn Pedretti.
I'm work with Carl on the stormwater that the countywide group is doing, and the municipalities are, you know, ganging together to do this. And part of it is education, and it just seems that this is a perfect education model, and we should lead by example. And this just says a lot about what the county says is a priority. And with our sustainability plan, this is certainly part of looking ahead and doing more than just the minimum. And for the small amount, to me, difference between doing a dry versus a wet, it makes the most sense. So I would certainly support this.
Maureen Friedland.
Yes, I would say much the same. Our LEC committee, through the months since we discussed the LEED proposal, has been meeting regularly to go through the aspects of certification and to see what's most important and what isn't so important, because we heard from this board that there is a concern for energy savings and solid environmental policy, but without all the extra paperwork and without any paperwork that wouldn't be of direct benefit. So we work to find out what would be of most direct benefit and how we can set policy and direction for the community and for our families for the future. This resolution and the next resolution are really the last undecided pieces that we expect to need to vote about. The original LEED proposal was as high as $1,007,000, and now we've brought back the most important aspects that for us to decide on right now. And I think that these items really are very important for the future. We have our own extensive stormwater ordinances, and we have a land conservation department that demands of developers and contractors and landowners that they minimize the amount of pollutants. So we have an opportunity to model and to do the same and to be leaders and not just to do the bare minimum, which is what the base bid does now. So even though we're very close to that $29.5 million, we did add the probation and parole build out, which was something that was unexpected at the very beginning. That was $641,000, and we do expect to get that back in rent. So we really are accomplishing all of our goals and really staying on budget or where we need to be at this particular time with all the knowledge that we've gained since we started this project. So I urge that we accept this resolution. Thank you.
Joe Veenstra.
I'll pass.
Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with all of the things that were said. The one big thing, issue, is where are we going to find the $500,000 that we're over budget with this now? And how is it going to impact our budget for next year, and where are we going? How many more of these are coming in before we're all through? I think, Steve, you probably can answer that better than anybody.
First of all, as Supervisor Freeland rightly pointed out, at the end of the project, one of the decisions you'll be making is seeing where all the financing is as far as contingencies and those types of things. But the financing specifically of the probation parole build-out would be recommended as a loan from the general fund, and either in the full amount or a small balance of it, depending on how the entire project works out, to keep it back down under the dollar amount of debt. You have not authorized additional issuing of debt. We will not be recommending any additional debt, and we'll be financing most of, if not all, of the 641 through a loan from the general fund, which will be paid back by the lease rent. So we'll be able to keep this down under. But the dynamics of the resolution you approved requiring two-thirds, and the fact that it does on paper go above the 29.5 until you make that final decision, we had to meet the letter of your direction, and that's why technically it meets the two-thirds. I've talked with Supervisor Freeland about this several times. If this had come in earlier than the probation and parole lease, that would have required the two-thirds anyway because it was over by square foot. And this particular resolution, if it had been acted on before the probation parole lease, would not have required the two-thirds. So it's really a sequencing matter. She's made that point a couple of times.
Bev Mock.
I just wanted to maybe repeat a little bit, but Greg Stengel
told us at one of our committee meetings that bioretention basins are more efficient in removing both sediment and harmful chemicals before stormwater reaches the Mississippi River. And he also said that the Land Conservation Department is encouraging the use of bioretention basins in construction throughout the county. And I'd like to repeat, too, our ordinances. I'd like to read a couple things from the Stormwater Management Ordinance. Under the purpose, it states, the purpose of this particular chapter is to establish long-term stormwater runoff management minimum requirements that will diminish the threats to public health, safety, public and private property, and the aquatic environment. And then several specific purposes are given, and one of them is minimizing water pollution from stormwater runoff. And our strategic plan for sustainability states that the County Facilities Department will be responsible for implementation of several action items, and one of them is increase our stormwater infiltration areas to reduce the strain on stormwater infrastructure and help recharge groundwater. I also learned that the YM in Onalaska has a bioretention basin. Gunderson Clinic's office out by the mall also does. And the Eco Park building has a rain garden and a bioretention basin. And they are good examples of what we all need to be seriously thinking about doing and continuing to do. And so I recommend highly that we vote for this.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. It's a foregone conclusion that we're going to have the standards on us. But, you know, this says that these basins are designed in accordance with the DNR standards to achieve 40% sedimentation of the suspended solids. What would the other ones? Does anybody have the information on how much of the sediments are retained in the other ones?
Carl, do you have any?
Yeah, the bioretention treat suspended solids or remove suspended solids at about 90% or at 90%. Compared to a 40%, 30%, depending on whose calculation. I guess 40% is what the engineer has said.
So what they're talking about then here is something entirely different to 40% sedimentation? Dry detention, okay. And so it's 50% better? Is that what they're saying? Yeah.
I think the achievement, it was a lot higher. It's at 90%.
More than double.
And then who's going to be responsible for cleaning out that sediment? Is that?
Jim Sparopoulos will be going out once a week. Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the 90% sounds very impressive, so I asked Mary Jo Webster to give me the information on 90% of what. And according to her, the source loading and management model, SLAM, the sediment load would be discharged from the parking lot under no controls would be 930 pounds annually. Assuming a 40% reduction rate supplied by the engineer using the dry detention, that sediment load would be 558 pounds annually. The sediment load discharged from the parking area using 90% deduction rate allowed for biotension would be 93 pounds annually. Now, using approximately 2,700 pounds for a yard of gravel, and if that's plus or minus a couple, I'm not trying to weigh it, just it works out. The 930 pounds or about 10 cubic feet of dirt, of gravel with without the basic one, 5.5 cubic feet using the dry retention and 1 cubic foot using the 90%. Well, 5.5 cubic feet, you could just about put in one of those little REO speed wagons. So the amount is not, and while the 90% sounds impressive, 90% of a dollar is 90 cents, 90% of $100,000 is more. So, I mean, we have to look, to me, we have to look and do a cost-benefit analysis of the amount itself rather than the percentages. So I move that, I certainly am not going to support this and don't think it's worth the $50,000 to keep a wagon full of the sediments out of the river.
Joe Veenstra.
I appreciate Mr. Ebert's analysis so that he got through Mary Jo. However, we're not talking about gravel. We're talking about suspended solids, which is basically junk that can be anything, stuff falling off your car, all sorts of poisons and toxins and whatnot that get filtered through the system. So we could be talking about lead, all sorts of things, not necessarily just, you know, pebbles and rocks and dirt. So I think I appreciate that sort of analysis because it is something to think about, and this is a fair amount of money for what looks to be just some place to drain water. However, given the combination of the potential for a storm water assessment that the county will have to pay, having to appear as leaders in the community and doing what probably will be required at some point in the very near future, and also that just that strict, plain old, if you're green and this is the thing to do, if you feel strongly about that, it's the right thing to do. I think for all those three reasons, $50,000 looks like a lot, but if this had been part of the plan originally, we probably wouldn't even be talking about it right now.
Any further discussion? Carol?
I guess I would just kind of reiterate that. The only way that the DNR has to gauge what's going into the storm sewer system is by suspended solids. They don't know how much people's cars are leaking oil and grease. They don't know how much pet fecal waste is going into the system. There's not a real accurate way to determine that, but they do know approximately how much sand can be removed, how much sediment can be removed. I know that the street sweepers in the city of La Crosse go through just about nightly, and the material that they remove from the street and then dispose of has to be disposed of almost as a toxic material because of the contaminants that were within that material. If you were to run percolate water through that sand or through that sediment, it's pretty dirty stuff. So it's not simply the volume. I would say it's as much what's within, you know, on the grains that's coating the sediments that's going into the water system that I think needs to be considered.
Any further discussion? Mr. Ebert.
Yes, I guess I would ask then, what are we going to do with our miles and miles of roads and other parking lots that are obviously doing the same thing? Well, are we going to go in and try to do all those with the sediment ponds?
Well, that's part of what I'm trying to do with the stormwater education is to get as much of what is going into the, you know, the water that's hitting those roads before via storm drains and storm pipes. I'm trying to get people to understand that if you can remove that, you're removing the amount of contamination that you're sending into the river. We're also, you know, this the street sweeping that they're now being required to do. The city was required previously or began doing it previously. But that's why, is to try to clean that material up, recognizing the contaminant load within it.
No, I think that's a great idea, and the sweeping and sweeping our parking lots, I think, is a good idea. I'm just not convinced the amount that's left is worth this particular cost.
Jay Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It isn't working, is it?
Just talk a little closer and a little louder.
Okay. Part of what precipitates that utility is that the city is facing many millions of dollars in costs for stormwater management, particularly quality. You know, this is an issue where we're all going to have to take more responsibility for the runoff because the real problem in La Crosse is too many impervious surfaces. I think this is really an opportunity for the county government to set an example, to show leadership. It's an opportunity for us to show our commitment to sustainability, and it's certainly an opportunity for us to be part of the solution and not the problem.
So a hand over here, Sharon Hampson. Did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out one thing on this white sheet that you have that compares bioretention to dry retention ponds. Second from the last thing is bacteria, fecal coliform. Now, even if you don't understand what that means, everybody knows what fecal is. And this is the stuff that closes beaches, causes diseases. So if you, you know, ignore all the rest of this, just look at the fecal thing and think hard about that.
Further discussion. Mr. Geary, did you have your hand up?
Do we have to clean these out annually, or what do we do? I mean, if it's accumulating dirt or sediment, what happens after a while? You get a lot in there. Do we haul it to landfill, or what do we do with it?
From my understanding, the ones that have been put in locally have yet to be cleaned out. You know, this isn't something that's just new this year, last year, or whatever. And the DNR requirements began back in the early 90s, and so that's when they initially started looking at various forms of treatment. And from my understanding, those are still in place with, you know, minimal clean out. It all depends, you know, it's hard to say because of, you've got to look at what's draining into it. So if we've got an acre parking lot and someplace else, a Walmart has a 20-acre parking lot, there's going to be a difference. So you need to know, you know, it's hard to say a blanket statement of how long it's going to take before it requires some sort form of maintenance.
Okay, and what stops this from getting into the groundwater then?
Well, the compost and the engineered soils, which is basically a compost sand mix, percolates, allows the water to slowly seep through. And the idea then is that the plants within the bioretention actually filter this out. And most petroleum products, oils and greases that are going through any sort of organic material will actually adhere to the organic material.
Joe Veenstra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to let everyone know, we did ask that question at our meeting, and Mr. Spropoulos indicated, you know, that would be a maintenance issue down the road, but they just aren't sure how long, you know, but it is realistic that will have to be cleaned at some point.
Maureen Friedland.
But on the positive side, there are some real neat opportunities here to bring different community groups in, master gardeners, even some of the local nurseries, to work with the county on keeping these ponds in nice condition. Mr. Spropoulos explained to us that he didn't want to bring any of those groups in at this particular time because he wanted to make sure that the project got done and on time and as it needed to be. But perhaps in the future, as part of the education model, we might be able to work with some local groups and really make this a very, very interesting and beautiful area. If you see some of these bioretention areas around town, in addition to what Supervisor Mock said, Franciscan Skemp, the new clinic in Holman, Home Depot, Prairie View Elementary, Allergy Associates, new buildings have these, and they're really quite lovely, and they can be a showcase for our county as people drive into the downtown area.
Any further discussion? Jeff Schrader.
Well, I don't know a lot about this, as you can tell by the questions I'm asking, but it gives the bottom length of the dry retention ponds is 100 feet. Is the bioretention pond a lot bigger? What's the scoop there?
I can grab the plan. I think I printed out a plan. I wouldn't think that they would be. You know, to be honest, I haven't looked at the actual sizing of each of them. I mean, the actual area that they're going to be contained within isn't changing. Is that correct, Jim? So it would be the same size.
Mr. Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've been doing this in the farming country for the last 100 years. We've been building diversions and terraces and retention ponds for many, many years. And if the farmers put these structures in and they do a good job of grass farming and strip cropping, they may never fill up. And it's the same what we're doing with the cities now and the parking lots and everything else. We're building these little retention ponds which will filter the water from the immediate area, and the suspended solids will get hung up, clean water will flow down through and go back into the water system and the underground storage of water down there. So we've been doing this in the farming country for years, and now we're just moving it into the city, and we're working under certain different conditions, and the retention basins are sized depending on how much water will flow into them from the immediate area. So come on out to the farming area, and I'll show you around some of the things we put in 100 years ago, before my time on the farm.
I have a correction to the agenda. It indicates that this requires two-thirds vote of the entire board. Actually, it's two-thirds vote of members present. The requirement for the two-thirds vote is because it exceeds the $29.5 million that we had set aside. We had indicated previously that anything exceeding that would require a two-thirds vote of the members present. That is what the requirement is for this one and the next resolution. Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. And Margaret wants me to call the question, but I'll just make my statement, and then I will.
Margaret and about everybody else, I think.
Yeah, okay. Well, just another benefit of our reason for doing a retention pond is that we will have much less street flooding due to the fact that our sewer systems are very, very old, and they were built in a smaller a capacity than is needed now. So any of our city supervisors especially are very aware of at times in flash flooding and so on. The retention ponds reduce the flow, and then it gradually seeps into the system rather than all going right into the catch basins right away. So that, and in order to humor my seatmate, I will move the question.
Any objection to closing debate? Seeing no objection, debate is closed. We will now vote on the resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
One no, Mr. Ebert. That resolution passes. Next item, Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number 16-9 to honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, resolution to approve mechanical commissioning and watt meters for air handling units for law enforcement addition. Whereas the resolution approving the addition to the LEC included a number of energy conservation measures and sustainable design concepts, and whereas the LEC Construction Committee has reviewed all of the sustainable concepts and is recommending that the following items be included for construction of the new addition: 2 watt meters for air handling units at $3,477, mechanical systems commissioning contractor $15,000, mechanical systems commissioning agent Rentschler $40,000, for a total of $58,477. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby approve the above listed items for a total cost of $58,477. Be it further resolved that the cost of these items be included in the project funding as determined by the County Board through a combination of the final debt issue or loan from general fund. Fiscal note, if this resolution is approved after the resolution on bioretention and bike racks, the total project cost to date will be $30,001,672. This dollar amount includes the original construction bids, $28,946,029, probation and parole build out, $641,001, and alternate bid E heat reclaim, $146,524, which were previously approved by the board. It also includes the $150,000 reserve for solar hot water. I move its approval and ask for the floor.
Moved by Vicki Burke, second by Bill Brockmiller. Ms. Burke.
At the committee that met at 5:45, this motion was carried unanimously.
Discussion. Ralph Geary.
Is this thing we talked about before where somebody comes in to review or see if our systems are running efficiently? That's lead certification.
Mr. Spiropoulos will answer that.
Is this that part of that lead certification, one of the components, or what was that?
Excuse me. It's a component of lead certification, but it's a very scaled back component of it. Basically, what it is a third by the county that works for the county to verify that the systems are performing as specified in the bid documents.
Okay.
So.
That's what I thought it was. Now, this thing is a total waste of money. We hired an architect, was hired by the county, who has all this technical. He's working for us. We hired a construction manager to overview this stuff. They're working for us. I mean, and then we have the subcontractors that are supposed to install this stuff according to specifications that has been laid out by the architect, and the construction manager reviews it. If those people weren't capable of doing this, they shouldn't have been hired in the first place. I mean, I don't see any benefit to the county to have it up on a piece of paper that we commission somebody when we're already paying for an architect and a construction manager to set up these systems correctly.
Mr. Spiropoulos?
In a perfect world, I would agree with you 100%. But that's not what we're dealing with today.
So you're telling me that our architect, you're not confident that our architects and the construction manager are able to do what we hired them to do? And this would be part of their contract.
No, I'm confident that they're able to do what they designed. The construction manager is not capable of doing this, nor have they ever been. General contractors do not oversee mechanical systems. That is not their expertise.
But it's in the architect's contract to do this. He is supposed to have this thing running at, you know, peak efficiency when this building, when it's turned over to us.
They are not contracted to verify point by point that this system is put in correctly.
If it isn't put in correctly, we'll be in litigation with them at some point in time.
Mr. O'Malley?
Again, not to engage in a debate, this was debated and discussed quite in detail, and as you can tell by unanimous vote from a LEC committee that it was not always unified on decisions. It was quite clear that, and the architect verified, that mechanical commissioning is critical to make sure that no one has made any error, not just in how the installation of the fans are and the mechanical equipment, but also to make sure that it's properly balanced and operating correctly. That doesn't mean you won't get heat in the building if you don't do this. It's that it won't operate as efficiently as designed and balanced, and that the staff is trained on exactly how to balance it correctly, how to operate it correctly, and how to maintain it. And there were skeptical people on this committee, Supervisor Geary, that were just as skeptical as you are right now, including myself when this started, saying the exact same things, and it was clarified for us that commissioning as described is not a part of either the design or the construction management. And that's actually why it's been added as a lead standard, is to make sure that all the systems that we're spending money on as a society do have an element to make sure that everything's working properly, because many times each part of the component of the contractors don't always communicate clearly or make sure that they're working together. The architect, Val Shu, told the story about exactly the same type of thing that happened in their new building, that without commissioning they would not have found a number of errors made corrections in how their mechanical was actually installed, because they were LEED certified and required a higher level of commissioning. Committee members that were on this, again, we're on both sides of this issue until as late as this evening when we got a unanimous vote. So there were people that, had the opportunity to sit through that discussion, were very skeptical about it and came to this resolution and to support it unanimously.
Leanne Paff?
Thank you. I'll pass because Ralph just asked exactly what I was going to ask, why it wasn't included.
Ray Ebert?
Well, for Supervisor Gehring, I'm not known to be one that's overly magnanimous with the taxpayers' money, and I'm actually supporting this. I think you'll find that this is cost-effective in the long run. It's a system, all these independent systems, this will put them all together and balance them, and each guy could put his own system in, do it properly, but it doesn't necessarily interact properly. This, and I'd like to actually thank Mr. Spiropoulos. Originally, the other part of this was $25,000, and they were able to get it down to $15,000, which I was much more comfortable with. But again, as one who's not overly spendy, I think this is a good deal, and I think it's a very good program, and I'll support it.
Liberal. Joe Veenstra.
I don't know. I think Mr. Ebert's support of this probably makes it a clincher, but I just wanted to point out that the $15,000 is, to clarify, is up to $15,000, and they aren't necessarily going to spend that full amount. So,
further discussion, Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. A question just occurred to me. How much of our contingency in relation to that building project has been spent, and can any of this come out of contingency?
No, we do. Actually, on a regular basis, Supervisor Bina, on a periodic
basis. I'm not Bina.
No, but his comment was that we don't know. Of course not. I can tell the difference. You at least speak into the microphone. He makes comments off the side that only I hear. Oh. He said that we don't know what the contingency is. That is not true. On a periodic basis, at least every other month, the LEC committee is given a detail. I believe we've spent about $350,000 of the contingency, about $400,000. That detail goes to the LEC committee. We can certainly provide that to the full board if folks want. Yes, in theory, you could take this out of contingency if it's not sufficient at the end, but that's not the way that you budget. You need to make sure, especially when we haven't started the remodeling that is the most significantly cost concern there, you don't want to start going to contingency yet. So that's why we've asked to budget up front, to do it properly. If the contingency is in excess at the end, you can always use that to apply to buy down the debt or any number of things, but you need to do that at the end of the project, not up front.
Mr. Gary.
Maybe my question should have been asked of Mr. Shepard. On previous architects, we have litigated with them for making errors, and I think they carry insurance for errors and omission, as was the first law enforcement center. We withheld, I think, a couple $100,000 because the architect followed something up, and I think we prevailed on that. So if we do this and we discover errors, are we going to try to collect it back off the architect?
Well, in answer to your first question, we did not litigate with the architect. We met with the architect and resolved some issues that were of concern.
You're right. We didn't litigate, but we paid him $200,000 less than his contract, or $225,000.
I don't recall what the number
was.
Is.
It was a large amount.
I agree with Mr. O'Malley that this is not included as part of the contract, so you're not going to be successful, in my opinion, in litigating against the architect. This is something in addition. I think you can do it or not, but I think you've heard the arguments in favor of it.
I think you misunderstood it. I didn't say we would litigate against the architect. I said if they discover some errors in the thing, it wasn't done properly, or they don't think it isn't running well because of whatever. If everything is okay, obviously we wouldn't be going after the architect. But I'm saying if they discover errors, I would be wanting to be recouping the money from the architect.
Let me try to answer that one, and Bill, tell me if you disagree. I think that the only scenario where we could go after the architect for errors, if in fact there were errors, for example, the wrong unit was put in and the architect didn't catch that they put in too small of a unit or something that had been spec'd, and so it was a clear mistake, as opposed to, as Mr. Ebert was saying, the things working together, tweaking it to work together properly. Would you agree if it was an out-and-out mistake, that'd be a different story?
Yeah, if they designed it incorrectly, undersized it, I think is the scenario that we're talking about. If they undersized the system for the building, then you might have a point, but that's not what we're talking about.
Further discussion? Jeff Schrader.
I was just wondering how you came up for the criteria to qualify these people. I see you weighted their interview above their qualifications. How did you do that?
In working with finance and purchasing, we came up with that criteria. We didn't want to put a lot of weight on cost because we want talent. It takes somebody with a lot of talent to go over these systems. A lot came out in the interview, quite honestly, that wasn't in their proposal. So the interview held a lot of weight.
Don Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, I see this as $55,000 in labor that we should be already getting, and I kind of agree with Ralph on the majority of it. We did have some problems with the old jail, and we did rectify that. But in this case, we are telling our people who are putting the mechanical in that we don't really trust you, and we're going to spend $55,000 to coordinate the rest of the activity for balancing everything within that system. These guys are the ones that put the systems in, and they also know what they're doing. And I guess maybe we're going to get a paper which says this building is commissioned, and that is worth $55,000. I cannot see that.
No. May I respond to that?
Absolutely.
There will not be a plaque on the wall that says we commissioned this building. No, we will not. I will get a full report that tells me what they found, how they corrected it, but we will not be putting a plaque on the wall saying that we commissioned it.
I'm not going to assume that there are going to be changes because the guys who are putting this mechanical and heating and air conditioning and whatever in already know what they're doing. You're assuming there's going to be a lot of changes, and the micro balancing is going to, we're going to pay $55,000. I cannot see that.
I'm not assuming anything. I know we're going to have problems. I can almost guarantee you that. We've built two buildings in the last 20 years. I was part of the tail end of the one, and we had problems in both of those buildings. So,
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you. On a move to close debate, but only after I get my 2 cents worth in. This $58,000 is how you find out if everything is working. You can't just look at a machine and say, oh, it looks like it's working, right? This is how you find out. And if you don't find out, you don't know how much money you're wasting. So this is a $58,000 investment that will pay for itself over a very short period of time by correcting the mistakes. Now I move to close debate.
Any objection to closing debate? Debate is closed. We'll vote on the resolution, which requires a two-thirds vote of the members present. All in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Aye.
The noes, please raise your hand. Bridget Flood, Ralph Geary, Don Vina. That resolution passes. Is that it for you, Ms. Burke?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Items for future agendas. I got a few things here. One of the things on Monday that, and don't forget, we have policy planning this coming Monday. It was moved from what would have been Labor Day. So make sure that's on your calendars. I was intending to do the appointment for the 34th District this evening. However, the person that I'm appointing, Tina Weirs, had previously scheduled to be out of town today and tomorrow, so she will be back and will be appointed on Monday. The first comment that was made after the interviews was made by Mr. Spiker, who said, this is the best group of people we have yet to interview. This was a tough choice. We had really, really good people. So I'm really pleased with the caliber of folks that are interested in serving in local government. I think that's a real credit. So that will be Monday. I've been asked to excuse Ms. Benrud from policy planning on Monday. She has some surgery coming up. I guess she will be excused. And we all wish Arlene our best in the surgery, and we look forward to getting you back here just as quick as possible. And the Riverside Center 3 parking issue, do people want to talk about that or not talk about that? I'm not saying that there's a point. If people want to, we will. It's up to you. Anybody want to add it to the agenda? Raise your hand if you want it added to the agenda. Okay, that's less than half. It's not going to be added to the agenda. If the city follows my request and has a meeting of the review board, I guess it'll be aired there. I assume it'll also be discussed at the city council. Audrey, when is that scheduled for at the council at this point?
It's not. The mayor is scheduling it, and I haven't been given notice.
Okay. All right.
The
Mr. Dodge.
Public hearing next. Andrea
Richmond.
I believe
I have it correct that there was just announced today a public input or public hearing on Wednesday. Is that correct, Dan?
Tuesday at 7:30.
Tuesday, I'm sorry. I just saw an email.
Okay. So that's your chance. If you are interested in that, Tuesday at 7 over at City Council Chambers. All right. Are there any other items for future agenda or announcements of any sort? Anything we haven't covered? That gets us to, Maureen?
One of the other items at the LEC meeting the last time that didn't make it on the agenda is that there's the on the existing building where it says lacrosse and the words are smushed together, that's going to be separated so that it's going to say lacrosse law enforcement center. So we're going to have that outcome also of all of our meetings through all of these months.
Sounds good. That doesn't need to be commissioned to find out if they're too close together or anything. Okay. Anybody else? Jeff Schrader.
Just a question for everyone on the board. How many people here are going to Oktoberfest in the Capitol?
Anybody going to Oktoberfest in the Capitol? One maybe, Tara Johnson. Another maybe, Brad Conkle. Jill Billings, you're going?
Jerry Huber is going on my behalf. I have to be at the MVHS follow-up meeting for our commission that's meeting that day, but we are sending Jerry Huber on my behalf.
Anybody who is going probably may want to talk to Steve ahead of time, just as kind of the repository of knowledge of issues that have been talked about in committees that we may want to talk at the Capitol, make sure that they know. So I would encourage you to talk to Steve.
Is a repository the same as a bioretention?
Well, he's full of something, but we're not sure what it is. All right, any other announcements? John Menninger.
I might be a dinosaur, but I think this meeting went very, very well without that damn computer.
All right. I think that gets us to Bob Kyle. Move to adjourn, second by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. We're adjourned.